I am here again with Zach, Alex, and Ian. We're here to talk more about the gaming industry in Northeast Ohio. So Ian, you are currently a junior in Cleveland Institute of Art and Design. You are a game design. Game design program. So what made you get into the game design program in Northeast Ohio particularly, when it doesn't necessarily have like the strongest community?
Well, it was kind of like a crash course for me, because I didn't really get big into art until like my sophomore year of high school, and then I picked up a Blender 3D modeling program and really just got into it. And then my senior year, I started looking at art schools and realizing that like being a professional who makes video games are definitely a very viable and profitable industry right now. So I started looking at colleges in Ohio. I looked at Lake Erie College. They didn't have a great game program. And looking at Lake Erie, I looked at the Cleveland Institute of Art, and they did have a program. And I saw they had a really powerful name. They have a lot of history behind them. And I've looked at Shawnee State University too, but Cleveland Institute of Art offers a lot of financial opportunities to students. So they offered me a good package, and just went with it. It's been a big learning experience. Like I said, I'm pretty new to it, so it just was, I got the letter, and I went, all right, let's do this.
As Alex, for someone that is a professional developer, how do you see, like, the upcoming, semi-professional, so you haven't, taken over soon-to-be Coal Creek developers?
Yeah, well, that's pretty much official at this point, because there's not, I mean, as far as things go, I'm just, I guess, in charge now. It kind of just, like, flopped over one day. It was like, yeah, I'm in charge now. I was like, okay. So the goal is to try and bring game development to Northeast Ohio, specifically Youngstown, because, you know, there's stuff in Cleveland already. I mean, that's my goal.
To touch on that. So what in Cleveland have you seen, I guess, for both you and Ian?
The Cleveland Game Developer Group. Those guys are about as much as I know about. I heard there's a couple of companies. I think you might have mentioned that.
Yeah, there's a few. There's one of my professors, he is the creative director for Halo Media Works. They're in the Cleveland area, but they do a lot of like the companies that I've seen so far. They do a lot of a little bit of everything, you know. So Halo Media Works does games, animation, architecture, rendering, so a little bit of everything. So, well, yeah, there's definitely the groundwork for it. From what I've seen, it's still growing. It still needs like a lot of work to really become like game studios who like strictly do that. And there's also a lot of independent developers who create like a lot of good stuff. I think there's I can't remember the name of it, but there's Jared. I can't remember his last name, but he does We Can Code It. And he teaches high school kids about coding, and they get a lot of jobs out of that. Not necessarily in-state, but out-of-state as well.
And when you say jobs, like, just all type of coding? Or
mostly, like, entertainment-focused, so like video games and stuff like that, and interactive programs.
So have you seen, like, a job market in gaming in Northeast Ohio? Like in the Cleveland area, at least?
I know there's a little bit of stuff. It's not, like I said, it's not specifically for gaming. There's a lot to do with the casino now, with making games for the casino, but I mean, you're not going to find like a large studio in the area.
So when you say games for the casino, like what kind of games?
Mostly doing like the user interface for slot machines and like all the betting games that they have. And then some of the casinos have like more in depth than just like slot machines, but yeah, it's mostly just doing like the user interface and the simple interactions for them. But it's there, and as far as I know, it's fairly profitable. I know the casino does pretty well, so.
I know it makes it a little difficult sometimes to search the internet for things that you want, like in terms of gaming. Like you search gaming in Ohio, usually you'll get like the Ohio Gaming Commission or whatever it's called, that's in charge of the gambling regulations and things like that. It's kind of annoying because that's not really the type of game per se that I know that I want to pursue. But I know I live like 15 minutes from a casino, and I'm confident that they do pretty well money-wise.
I'm sure that's a good avenue for game development in the area. Because, like you said, it will be profitable.
So about, like, a non-video game jobs, like 3D modeling, are there a lot of people that you've seen go from 3D modeling for, like, animation, and then they do, like, cars or, like, architecture type of modeling?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, the smaller studios in the area, they do, like, a lot of work. And then also NASA, the Glenn Research Center, will pick up 3D modelers to work on prospective spacecraft and whatnot.
My dad he works for a company called TGW, and they do warehouse systems. And right now they're focused on the hardware, but they're trying to get more into the software side. And my dad is actually coming up with ideas to make that an interactive experience for the workers, where basically they could have a score and they can earn badges and things and move up and get, you know, better positions just working in a warehouse. It'll kind of encourage them to work harder. But it's like game design elements in real life. So I actually am interested in moving into that field as well. But my first option, obviously, would be working as my own independent studio.
It's that gamification of mm-hmm. the workplace.
Yep.
It's a pretty popular thing right now.
But it is a really good idea.
I've never considered other avenues as like a long-term career path. I've pretty much fully committed to, all right, I pretty much know this is what I want to do. It's just, how do I get there and not become bankrupt at the same time?
It's definitely a risk.
Yeah. And when you don't have a development scene near you that's very big in size, then you really have to dig in your heels and say, all right, I'm going to have to dig my own ditch here and by myself, and then maybe I can find other people that'll want to dig the ditch with me, and eventually you've got what you're looking for. You'll bring people in with your passion, but those people aren't going to do it themselves. And it requires someone else to go forward for them and make the path that they can follow.
The entertainment industry is usually in other areas of the world, like California. You need to usually move there if you want to get into the gaming industry.
Yeah,
but it is kind of changing. I would agree.
It definitely is changing, and the nice thing is, like, the Midwest cities are very cheap to live in. So you also see a lot of well-established professionals who are moving to this area and working remotely. So I know a guy who does concept art for a lot of Netflix. He lives in this area because he can charge like what people would be charging in New York, but in a Midwestern city. So he's making out really well, and that's one of the nice things. There's a lot of infrastructure and very cheap living in this area, as opposed to, you know, out on the West Coast or the East Coast, where it's more expensive to run a studio and to live there in general. So this area is very primed for the game industry to move in, and more entertainment to move in. And there's lots of schools who are very equipped to start teaching it. So I at this point, I think we're just waiting for a tipping point to really, a big studio to crop up and really kind of lay the groundwork for the entertainment industry in this area.
Talking about Youngstown as being a city, a very depressed city, in the past, they put all their eggs in one basket, right? They all put, all the industry in the city went into making steel. And when that crashed, there was nothing left for anyone to do. And so they kind of slid down the cliff there into rock bottom. But the nice thing that I've seen about types of jobs that we have coming in now with this remote stuff is that people are no longer locked down based on geography, which means that even if you lived in a depressed city, you can still you could write an email out to someone on the West Coast just to ask them for advice. All you have to do is go to your library to do that. So there's kind of a chance, at least now there's a chance for people to get into things and say, hey, you know what, maybe I'll do web design or whatever, and you can get all this remote stuff. And there's nothing in Youngstown, really, other than like some businesses in the city and a university. So all of those remote businesses are really what'll pick up that city. there's nothing else there to do it. They're not sitting on gold or anything like that.
Yeah, really, it's just about, like, educating people that they can get jobs in that field. Because, you know, right. you're going to be in the entertainment right. industry, you got to be in Hollywood, or you got to be in New York, or you got to be, like, there's a lot of stuff in Florida and whatnot. But it you can do it here, and it's just, it really starts, like, at a much younger level than us, teaching people that, yeah, you can go out, you can get jobs like this, and they're very viable, and they make lots of money, and you can really succeed. It's, people need to know that they can do it.
There's a stronger interest in just staying in Northeast Ohio and, like, bringing those skills into, like, a career here?
I think a lot of people in the area would love to stay there because, I mean, a lot of people who have gone to Cleveland fall in love with the city, no matter how much hate you get from outside. But, you know, it's, I mean, it's a great area and it's really up and coming right now. People would love to stay there, but they're just afraid that they can't succeed there because, again, there's not the major studios there. I mean, everybody wants to work for a major studio, but so I think people are I think people are a little bit afraid to stay there, and they want to, you know, kind of, as you said, dig their heels in, but they just don't know if they can do it themselves. And that's where the game groups that are cropping up are really useful, because it helps people just kind of, like, plant their roots and make their own stuff instead of working for larger places. Like, I would love to sit in the Cleveland area and open up my own place, but I just don't know if I have, like, the technical know-how coming out of college to do it. So, I mean, even for me, that question of whether I want to stay in the area or go someplace else is a big one.
I feel like the industry is, like, really moving away from AAA studios as well.
Definitely.
So that's definitely making it easier for, like he said, if he wanted to try and start his own independent project, it's at the point now in time where, like you said, back 10 years ago, that would be a lot harder to do. Not now, it's definitely, and plus with, like, social media and everything, you can find others interested, and you can even work with them online. You don't have to be in the same area anymore.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I've worked on collaborative projects with people in other states. As long as you just have the drive, I guess.
Yeah.
You can match skill sets and make something with a fairly small team. Like he said, a 19-person team is pretty tiny compared to, you know, a AAA studio.
I think there's a really interesting thing going on in the development community, and you kind of alluded to it, where it used to be that people, indie games were cheap, and people looked at them as cheap games, right? And AAA games were games that you could count on. You know, you're paying that money, but you could count on it to be a good game. And I think the script is being flipped a little bit, where people are like, I don't think I can trust these studios. I don't know if I should give them $60 for this thing. Whereas you look at an indie game and say, this isn't going to cost me too much money, so my risk on this is pretty low, and I might get a really great experience out of it. I mean, you pay, like, I don't know how much, like, Braid was, like, a huge game for me that I played that Jonathan Blow made. And, like, that was only, like, $10 when I bought it. And I'm like, I enjoyed that game and remember it more than a lot of AAA titles I've played. And I feel like that's the feeling right now.
I feel like it also has to do with when you have big teams working on games like Assassin's Creed and just titles that just keep getting re-released, a lot of the creativity that individuals are trying to put in there gets lost because they're only working on, like, say you have a person working on textures purely for a year. You might have a creative director that tries to push some ideas out, but it's you're not getting the same amount of creativity out of those games as you would as an indie game. I feel like you're getting a lot, especially with VR, and I think indie studios are going to take over VR very soon here as it becomes cheaper. I think it will be easy for studios to start up here in the future.
In the gaming side for VR, they'll take over.
Yeah.
I've seen some people, when I was, there was an Akron VR meetup that I went to, and there were a lot of guys doing some really cool stuff with VR and AR, like in the medical field and stuff. And I was kind of blown away. I was like, this is really interesting, like all the applications that you wouldn't normally think of. The one that comes to mind was this gentleman that I met. I believe his name was Hashim. He was working on VR for medical patients. I think it was more of like a geriatric thing, but applying, like, you put the VR headset on and you, and like, it's a place, it's a virtual place where you can like meditate and do like meditative exercises that you're walked through in VR, but it just takes you out of like everything else and like puts you in your own little private zone where you can just be. And it's like really interesting stuff. It has like no game aspect like whatsoever.
Mm. It's still technically gamification though, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because even though it's directly linked to other industries, I still feel like that is technically the games industry. You're putting yourself into another world, I guess.
True.
Yeah, as long as you create like some sort of reward system for mm-hmm. doing an action, you're kind of in a way gamifying mm-hmm. something.
Yeah, so. I that's just how I feel. I feel like the gaming industry is just becoming more and more expansive as technology like rapidly changes.
Do you see like the same amount of profit coming from like the indie studios?
Not nearly as large as a profit that you would get from a AAA title. Like you said, you're charging a lot less, but you, I don't know, it depends on how many units you sell as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's some of those real outliers, like Minecraft is made by, what, one guy? And
mm-hmm. Originally, yeah.
He's about a billionaire now. I feel like there's definitely ways to make it big, but the indies, there's like the difference between indie and the bigger studios is like AAA. It's not just you're dealing with the developer; you're also dealing with the publisher, and publishers don't always care about is it a satisfying experience. They care about what's the bottom line. While indie developers, they really just love giving you fulfilling and enjoyable experience. Then you also see getting like a little bit more scientific. Like a lot of kids these days don't have the attention span to sit down and 30 hours into a AAA game. So you see 2 to 10 hour indie games for
even the
$5.
Mobile industry.
Yeah, they're really becoming something big now, and you can definitely get like a very beautiful and interesting story across in that short amount of time.
You and Ian both mentioned like the business side of stuff. The longer I do this for, the more I become an advocate for people going into the game industry to understand business, because in a lot of industries, people are like, I kind of get the business, but I don't really need to I don't really need to know the ins and outs of it. Like, I know enough. But I feel like people in game development actively push the business side of it, like, totally out of their mind. They're like, business part doesn't exist. Like, this is games. Like, keep your business out of it. But it is a business at the end of the day. And I really think game programs in colleges should require some basic business courses, because it's absolutely essential, especially with games. The timelines that it take, like especially with companies with multiple employees, like 19, you gotta coordinate all those people, and if they don't know realistically what a business looks like on the inside, they're gonna have these skewed perspectives of why this deadline doesn't make any sense and why do we have to wait on this thing to happen mm-hmm. and things like that.
Yeah, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think in general, just from what I've seen from our game program, is teaching how to make games needs a massive overhaul because it's such a broad subject. There's so much you can teach people, and you can't really just boil it down into a game design major, because there's so much. Like I said, in our major, we've made card games, board games, we use Game Maker, we use Unreal, we use Maya, we use Unity, we use Mudbox.
And the tools are always changing too.
So yeah, and everything's changing so much. So majors really need to be boiled down into, you want to specifically do this for a AAA studio, or you want to learn business and indie development and stuff like that. Or maybe you just want to stick to like modeling and animation. You want to like have a crossover of those two. So you really can't just look at a major and go, this is the game design major, because there's just so much to be said about games that you can't put it into a four-year program, and it really needs a massive overhaul. And then colleges need to really invest in their programs and really get their students the equipment they need to succeed, because they'll get a lot of return on their students in the long run. It may cost a lot up front, and they may really have to sit back and overhaul everything, but they'll get a lot of return, and they'll also get a lot of new students, because there's lots of students who want to be game developers but just don't know how.
Do you think people would leave the indie studio to go to a quote-unquote profitable company to make games, or do you think people would still stick with wanting to like make their own thing without having to deal with the studio system?
I feel like a lot of people would see that as less of a risk, because if you are working for a larger studio, they're much more structured, they've done this before, and you're definitely going to get paid. Whereas if you're trying to do your own thing, it's a huge risk. Like he said, it's basically running a business. So you need to know a lot more. Like, I'm at that point right now where my game is about finished, and I am still stressed out and worried because I need to market it and make sure that I'm going to sell copies. And it's all on me.
I've seen
it's pretty rough. But
I don't want to take away from what you're saying, but I wanted to respond and say I've seen a lot of people do small experimental titles while working at a large studio. And I really like that because they're kind of forced to do this thing over here. They got to work on a big game and then...
But they're not taking as much of a risk.
Right. They're over there. They've got a very specific aspect of it they have to do. And so they just go to work and they just do that. But what they take what they learn from there and apply it over here to this own, you know, little passion project that they have, and they experiment. And they could take away what they learned from their experiment and reapply it back to their job. And that takes a lot of time, but I think it's like kind of an amazing way to grow, because it's one of those, it's like a feedback loop. You just keep getting better and better the more you do it. I'll buy a copy of Gong Bat.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while I'll pull up Twitter and be like, so I met this guy, I made this game. I'm like showing people it. They're like, what? Like, yeah, it's just one guy.
It's been 3 years in the making.
Yeah, I remember when you started that way back in high school.
It's a big project for one person, definitely.
It's cool, though.
I think it'll be worth it, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, it looks so polished now.
Thank you. But more on the AAA side, I know that lots of studios, like 2K, they worked on Bioshock. They made 3 Bioshock games, and since the last one, they said they're not making another one. They want to split up and work on their own personal projects, like he was saying. They're actually working as small indie studios now.
Yeah, I think you see a lot of that now, where senior-level designers split off and do their own thing. Maybe just they release one project and they go back into AAA studios. But I think the bigger studios really can allow sometimes for people who don't feel like they know enough to get that extra bit of training too, and get paid for it as well.
Do you feel like there should be more collaboration between people?
Oh,
people
definitely.
Are more specialized?
I think that it would be really nice if they could split majors up, but then definitely have the cross-collaboration. So, you know, if you have an animation and 3D modeling major, they'll collaborate with people who are in the game development and whatnot. Because, I mean, now you see also with production cycles that studios do, a lot of times the bigger AAA studios hire out to other small places to pick up the slack when they need to, because AAA studios can't employ 2,000 employees at one time just to make the game, then lay everybody off afterwards. So you do, there's just so much collaboration that goes on, and like we mentioned earlier, a lot of the time it's over the phone, over Skype, over the internet, because people are in different countries, different states.
I feel like the project that I'm working on right now, I am glad that I've kept it to myself, because I have basically free expression with the project. And it's more of a hobby piece. Like I said, I've been working on it since high school. It's not necessarily my living, my career right now, but I'd like to turn it into that.
It'll make for an amazing portfolio piece.
Yeah,
definitely.
Definitely. See, like, that's the other thing. I've talked to like studio professionals like Jesse Shell. He owns a studio in Pittsburgh called Shell Games. You know what I'm talking about?
He's cool, yeah.
They're working on some VR projects right now. What he does is he leads a bunch of smaller teams of, I don't know, 10 people working on one of his projects, but they're working on a handful of projects at once, and he just basically leads them and uses his industry experience to help them out. And I feel like with a project piece like I have, or a portfolio piece, I might be able to land a job working on studios like that in the future.
Then since you're like going to lead Coal Creek, you say you want to like turn into like the type of studio environment that's a...
Yeah, well, Lineal Games, I definitely want to, which is my company, I'd like them to lead that charge. And Lineal Games will, as it is right now, and will continue to exist under, as a piece, a core piece of Coal Creek. And I think the more companies and people that join that group, it's another one of those feedback loop things where the better, we'll get better, and the people who join will get better, and they'll make us better, and it'll just grow and grow. I mean, there's a cap on how big you can grow, I suppose.
If this momentum continues, how do you see organizations, how you see them like hiring in the area and like keeping them here?
I was going to mention something about it earlier when Ian was talking about universities. I think one of the best things is that companies and groups should partner with universities, because I think university towns are going to be like the number one growth spots for game development companies, because people in college are still, they still have a little bit of that like idealistic, like you can do whatever you want kind of thing. I mean, you could have that viewpoint throughout your whole life, but especially in college, you're like, all my paths are open. I can kind of do whatever I want to do. Yeah,
they can land your job right out of your degree.
And the idea is to provide people with a little bit of that taste of this is a thing that exists, and if you like it, we will help you get the skills and tools you need. We can point you to the right people in the university that will help you follow the path you want, and you can come work on projects with other people in the group and game jams and build this network. And really, most good job opportunities come through networking. I guess there are some people who get like recruited on LinkedIn and stuff. Most of that's gonna come, it's all about who you know. So the more people that know more people, better your odds are that your name will get dropped somewhere and you'll get a phone call one day that says, hey, would you like to drive up to Cleveland for an interview? Or something like that. Or maybe you see all this stuff and you do these game jams and you say, you know what, I bet I could do that. And then you find a couple other people in the group up that kind of have the same feeling you do, and you start your own indie studio right out of the city. Well, that's another company that just joined the group, and that's another company that gets to throw their weight around. And of course, they have friends in the community too. And it's hard because game companies are competitors. It's like every indie studios of certain sizes all compete with each other within certain genres, because no one can buy everything. And so that's a little tough, because game developers tend to be nice, friendly people, sociable, in a way that they love talking about games. You don't see insurance salesmen meeting up and being like, oh, don't you just love selling insurance? I know I do. You know, like, I'm talking about types of insurances.
Yeah, that industry, you're definitely an enemy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I
can, that's the thing about games, is like, these people are your friends and your competitors at the same time. There's a little bit of caution that goes into that, but at the same time,
I feel like the collaborative effort will outweigh that risk, though. Like, hands down. Yeah.
I think if you build a dependable market together, I don't think anyone should have a problem with the other people.
The gaming industry isn't going to slow down anytime soon, whereas I think any of us are concerned.
Yeah. No, we're good.
The other dark, scary truth about game development is, if you can't put out a decent game, your company is going to go under.
So, are there studios that go to the Institute of Art and like kind of like scout?
Well, since Cleveland's still like small, we don't attract a lot of attention. But my school in particular has pretty close ties with Disney, so a lot of Disney people come over. A lot of Pixar stuff. We actually a lot of the animation we teach is for Pixar and stuff like that. So there's people who come for that, and then a lot of our professors, they're all required to be working in the industry as professors. So you can really look to them as potential employers, or potential contacts, because each and every one of them pretty much is a creative director at a small studio, so they can point you to someone in the area who could get you a job. It's really just you got to stand out to them, and you got to really be, you got to have the halo above your head and spotlight shining on you. But you can do it, and there's opportunities out there for everybody, too.
Does networking, is that something that just really has to be improved on? Is that like the key for like these studios?
I feel like there's a good network.
I think it's people getting into the network.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think people know really that people all across Ohio talk to each other about games.
Yeah.
I feel like in order for the industry to thrive here, though, we do need to move it away from social media and more like he's trying to do.
Yeah.
More in person, and you meet the contacts in person. You can work on game jams and things together.
As an example, I lived in like the Youngstown area all the way up until my sophomore year of college. I went away for about three years or so, 3.5 years. and I met game development people there. When I came back,
you went to Columbus.
Right, yeah, I was down at Otterbein University. But that's the thing, that network, I didn't even know it existed in Youngstown until I came back and met Kendra. But it had been there the whole time for decade and a half or more that I'd been living there, you know? Because I'd been at Youngstown State for a year, and it just wasn't there, at least not noticeably. So getting into that kind of thing, Columbus is a little easier, but we gotta make it easy for people to get into the network. And I think that has to do with being sociable, holding events with groups like Cold Creek.
Mm-hmm. That's where I think collaboration is most important, like you were asking, because I'm working on a solo project. I don't think I'm ever going to work on a solo project this big ever again, just from my own sanity.
You should do game jams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Game jams are great because you can prototype fast, and that's where I think indie studios definitely are taking the lead, is with game jams, because you get new game mechanics much faster than a AAA studio would. Mm-hmm. They keep rehashing the same shooters and the same I don't know how many Assassin's Creed there are now, but
afraid to break the mold.
Yeah,
the tongue. Yeah, that, with Game Jam, it forces you to be creative.
Innovative.
Yeah, you can't do well in a Game Jam unless you stand out in some interesting way.
I think that's like a benefit to indie studios is, there is less profit for games, there's also a lot less risk. So if you really stretch the envelope and create something totally different, if it doesn't work out, it's not a multi-million dollar project that's just in the toilets. And I think that's a major issue with AAA studios right now, is they know this works and it's sold for so long and they're just too afraid to make anything different.
Do you feel like these kind of studios that they should make, just constantly make different things? Because, if Call of Duty sells a lot, should they not make... Because I know, with Assassin's Creed, I feel like Assassin's Creed 2 is, one of the best 360 games. But it, came out not, a year after. So, my thing I feel is just, they just release games too often. They're the same.
Yeah.
So, would you say that the games that they make aren't different, or they just make too many similar games that weren't too close together?
Maybe a little bit both. I think their game studios really need to listen to their audience, and when their audience is sick of something, they need to switch stuff up. Because when Call of Duty puts out basically the exact same game every single year, it gets a little old. So I think they need to listen to what people want, and they need to change things up accordingly. Instead of just giving you retexture and better graphics of the same game with a slightly different 4-hour storyline,
I feel like studios need to, because there's beta testing and alpha testing now with how Steam is set up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can get your game greenlit while you're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a community that's interested in your project. And as long as you stay vocal with them, you can make sure that they're getting the product that they want. I feel like that is key, as well as innovation.
I don't think it's a bad thing for these big businesses, big game businesses anyway, to be risk adverse, to want to not break the mold in a hugely significant way. But I feel like game companies in particular lock down so hard on a formula that the people making the game can't even fix the mistakes from the last one.
Yeah.
They're forcing them to keep it the same without being able to, at the very least, improve the mechanics that already exist.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if they were more vocal with the community, those changes would be made.
Yeah, and I think they would actually make... They're concerned about keeping the profit, the same kind of profit margins that they've already gotten, which is fine, but I feel like... I think it makes more sense that if you let them at least move forward in some degree, you would make even more profit. That's my thought on it.
I think that really plays into you said it plays into EA's current issue right now with Battlefront 2. They wanted to keep the money flowing the same way they had before, but they switched over from charging people for chunks of extra content to microtransactions, and that really created a stink. So I guess sometimes studios shouldn't break the mold, but they do need to listen to their audience to figure out how they can find that middle ground in there.
Yeah, I feel like if they would have pitched that idea to their customers before they implemented it, they would have gotten a lot of backlash, but it wouldn't be nearly as what they've gotten now.
I mean, it's no market research at all on that one.
Yeah.
Absolutely none.
I know, like, I was big into Madden when I was, like, younger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, I remember Madden 11 is when I, like, stopped. Because I don't get how they went from all these different, like, modes and, like, things and, like, the PlayStation, Xbox, like, original ones. And then when they went to, like, the 360 and PlayStation 3, the graphics, I guess, looked nicer and textures and stuff, but they didn't look good. And they just, like, got rid of all those things that they had before, and then they just started adding it, like, to the newer ones as if they were new. Like how come you're, like, now re-implementing owner mode like it's a new thing? We had, like, a Madden 2004 and, like, Madden 2012. And then it's just, like, I see how it looks. I'm just like, the way these players run, like, no one runs like that. The way these people catch, it's like, yeah, it's all exciting catches. It's just like, no one catches like that in the NFL. Can you just, like, make the thing how it used to be, but with better graphics?
And like you said, they're not releasing new content.
They're repackaging stuff. Yeah.
And it was cheaper. Like, I remember when games were, like, $30. And now they're all $60. They just have to be that way.
Yeah, and it's kind of a scary thing, because, like, you wonder if these AAA studios with their greed are going to kind of create, like, a small crash in the game market. And I think that's where indie companies have the opportunity to rise up, because while there are, like, a handful of major game studios who do release quality content consistently, the large number of them risk crashing things, and indie companies can fill that void by releasing quality content for a reasonable price.
I wanted to mention two things before we moved on. One of the biggest pet peeves I have in, like, all of video games is crowds in Madden. They're so god awful in, like, every game. And they, like, look at these beautiful players. You can, like, see the sweat, like, dribbling down their forehead, and then the camera pans to the crowd and they're, like, cardboard cutouts. Which I know it's, like, a memory limitation issue, but at the same time, it's like, it looks so bad.
They're trying to make everything else realistic.
Yeah.
You can tell where the money was.
I think game development has another interesting problem with game programming being very tied to the game's design. In software development, you see a lot of outsourcing in things that aren't video games, maybe pieces of software and things like that, where they just send it out to, like, a code farm or work with people in another country or something like that, where they can pay out a really low price to get code written. Where in game development, I feel like that's just not an option the game developers have. And that's why the prices keep getting higher, or probably should be getting higher, or they're looking for ways to make more money, is because other software development companies can charge lower prices for stuff because their costs are lower. Because you gotta pay a small team of programmers, at the very least, a small team of programmers if you're a bigger studio.
I feel like where the issue lies with that, though, would be in graphical advances, because companies are always competing to have the most realistic graphics.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, graphics are one thing, but that's only a part of the project. If it's not fun to play, then it doesn't matter if the graphics are good.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of games that have beautiful graphics and they're awful. There are lots of games that have bad graphics, and they're really fun. It's just, like, the core needs to be enjoyable. And I think a lot of people would just kind of miss that.
A lot of AAA studios, I think, are missing that. And that is where the issue, like you said, they can't outsource, like other programming fields.
And I think you see an issue now where, with the release of, like, these new Xbox One S Plus, whatever, that they're coming out now, and it's because game studios are so focused on making things beautiful that they're not even paying attention to if consoles can keep up. So consoles are releasing, they have to release, well, I'm sure they want to, but you know, you can't just pick up, like, your old PS4 and plug in one of the new games and expect it not to get super hot and run not well, because they're just trying to get you to buy as much as they can get you to buy, in one go. And there's an issue back in like the days of Sega, when Sega was still making consoles, where they were doing things like this, where they would release like one game would be for a completely different console than the one that you bought now, and you had to buy specifically consoles to play different games, and it did, it caused a crash. And
or like they're just controller stuff.
Yeah, different controllers and whatnot. It's just they're just trying to make things so beautiful now, and they're not really paying attention to, are these good games? Are we treating our customer base the way we should be treating them? Because at the end of the day, it's about the customers. They can't make games if they don't have customers.
Okay, so you know how like they make, you were talking about they make games for the newer console, like the Xbox One X, and if it's made for that and you play it on like the older one, like your console has a hard time keeping up.
Yeah.
The console companies also have the opposite problem, where companies don't want that to happen. So what they do is they develop the game for the lowest common denominator. They develop it with just the specs for the regular Xbox One in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is now people have no incentive to go out and get an Xbox One, because there are a bunch of games that look exactly the same.
Yeah.
On both of them. So you've got like, you don't win either. You kind of lose either way.
Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, as a gamer, you just want a good game. And if it doesn't look amazing, as long as it's fun, that's what counts.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take a graphical downgrade to a gameplay downgrade any day.
Sometimes that's kind of how the industry's conditioned people.
Yeah, it's a little weird the way that they've like forced people to only like certain things. But I think in a way that's kind of damaging the games.
Yeah. I feel like that's also what compels pixel artists to continue making the work that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Like trying to communicate what something is and how it functions with the least amount of, I don't know what you'd call it, pixels and color as possible.
Yeah.
And it makes for some really interesting pieces. I bought a magazine, some European thing, and it's about a quarter of an inch thick of just, it's just all pixel art.
Yeah.
And pixel artists. And you look through this stuff, and there's some stuff that's made of like, I don't know, less than 30 pixels.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, that's Drake from Uncharted.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, how is it that you like can pick this stuff out and it's such like an art form?
Yeah.
And then there's like the complete opposite of that, where like everything has to be hyper realistic or people assume they won't buy it. I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about The Legend of Zelda earlier. You were talking about textures, and I've been playing Breath of the Wild, and the game is like so beautiful, but if you walk up to like any of the hills, the textures that are like actually on the hills and like cliffs and stuff are really not that great.
Yeah.
I don't understand. That's that thing about like the communicating something with the least amount of something possible.
Yeah.
Like it somehow made it look like incredibly beautiful without this like beautiful texture on this hill.
Yeah.
How do you
fix something
great
to the mind? So that
they
can register all that.
It's so interesting, because I'd rather look at Breath of the Wild than Uncharted all day.
Yeah. I think what you're saying, like with the hyper-realism, is there's something with me as I'm mostly a 3D modeler, it's kind of scary now, because every scan stuff in. You scan a model in. You don't model characters anymore. You get a model, you dress them how you want, you scan them in, you know, you go and you fix little stuff. You scan guns in, you scan environments in.
That's interesting.
So, and for me as a modeler, I'm kind of scared, because my college isn't teaching me how to scan things. But all the major studios are scanning, so is there going to be a job for me? Or are we just going to send drones up with scanners and scan cities and plop them in the game and then call up the model agency and bring in models and scan them in for stuff? Mm-hmm. In the future, is there going to be a place for 3D modelers to even be in games, or are we just going to be scanners?
Mm. I feel like it might shift a little bit, but I think that...
Yeah.
I think you do need, like he said, you don't need hyper-realism to make a good game.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is there's some things that you like could not ever possibly scan. Like, Calamity Ganon in Breath of the Wild, like, there's nothing in the real world that I could think of that you could possibly scan to, like, get that particular mm-hmm. thing.
I think that's why, like, a lot of people, such as me, are looking more towards the indie side and more towards the hyper-realism AAA titles, because there's lots of work for us there. And I think we're kind of getting tired of this ultra-realism, and we like the stylized characters and the more interesting, more interesting art and whatnot. I think it's becoming not just a more viable field for modelers, but a necessary field.
Do you think there will be an increase in, like, jobs? Or you think there will be a point where people decide, or, like, those companies find some other way to make games, and it will just be in the games that you go, like, actually make games with?
I feel like AAA studios, as time goes on, like he said, with technology and scanning and things, they will have less of a need for the amount of employees that they have now. I feel like it's going to diminish, unless, I don't know, like, you have games like GTA 6 coming out now.
I'm sure
they have a huge team.
I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing, though.
I feel like it is shifting over to indie. They're going to need more people. So.
Yeah. If you can make a better product that you can sell more units with a smaller team, I almost think that might free up people for more teams. So let's see, just more games.
Yeah.
Anything. And as with anything, the best stuff is what survives anyway. So if a company goes under, then those people go find a job somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like, studio teams are shrinking. That doesn't mean the jobs are shrinking. It just means more studios are opening up.
There's so many jobs.
Audiences get even more content. So I don't think it's necessarily a horrible thing that studios are, AAA studios are finding ways to shrink down to as few employees as possible. And then, like I said earlier, there's when production cycles, they hire on other companies. It's interesting, there's companies that are cropping up that are just 3D modelers or just animators or just texture artists that are being hired on to work for large studios to do just that specific thing, because it's easier than hiring people and laying them off as, you know, the production cycle goes up and down. I see a lot of students there, they want to make their own indie companies, and they really want to bring back 2D and pixel art, which is exciting, but I think it's also sometimes limiting the major a little bit, because they're focusing it on those kind of students, and they're not bringing in students who may want to be trained for a AAA studio. But largely, I feel like we have a lot of students who even want to do card games. We have a pretty good mix. And there's a lot of students who want to start off with AAA and move to like smaller 2D games. And that just goes into what I was saying about how majors need to, the way that they teach game design.
What do you feel like needs to happen so that these studios can actually be, I don't want to say profitable, but like jobs could be made from them? People actually want to go and work for the studios rather than just want to make their own.
I feel like there isn't a push for that right now, though.
Creating jobs. It's in Youngstown. There's a need for jobs. But I think people tend to buy in to visions of things. So, like, if that's why people always want to work for Blizzard or things like that, because they see the products and they realize that there's this, like, product vision for this company, and they really love the things that they put out, and, like, that's why they want to work for them. They don't want to go work for, you know, the people that make a game that's significantly less popular. Even if they enjoy that game, there's just not that, like, I don't know, it's like a visceral, emotional feeling that gets triggered when you have something like that. I think that's something that game companies can provide that other people can't, because you're providing a form of entertainment that requires a team. It's not like joining a band, because a band can only get, like, so big or whatever. But, like, with a game, you can have up to
unlimited
a ton of people. I guess you don't want to get too big, but yeah.
Companies like Rockstar have the money for that, though. So.
Yeah, it's like if you provide this vision, you know, for people, something they can really get behind. I think that is a really attractive trait of game companies that other companies don't really have. I mean, there are tech companies that have it. I think like Google, those like change the world kind of people.
Yeah, I feel like it's just innovation is key. Like,
yeah, a good culture, good company culture. I mean, that's good. You want that anywhere you work. But game companies do tend to have good cultures.
One thing, actually, so you said, like, a lot of people, they want to, like, start their own indie company. And then they neglect the schools, they neglect people that actually want to work for, like, AAA. What do you feel is the biggest difference between working for an indie and AAA in terms of, like, the content, the way things look and, like,
I think we're just not being trained on the equipment that we need to be trained on, like learning how to use motion capture and scanning and all like the very technical sides of it. So I think I think for people who want to work for AAA studios, they have a very set thing that they want to do for them, and they are not interested in the whole. Having more guided majors that'll focus on just teaching you for that specific job would be a big benefit to people who want to work for AAA studios, because I mean, in any major you learn a lot of information that you may never use again, and I think that's currently with the way that game design majors are set up, I think that's doubly true, because there's very few people in our major who want to make card or board games, but we spent an entire year on it. And I think that's just something that schools need to look at and assess whether or not they need that to be a necessary part of the major. I mean, you could have a physical gaming major as well as a video gaming, and then find the line where you can split the two off and focus down to better equip your students for what they need.
I've worked on a couple of physical games, and they're a really interesting beast. You can actually learn systems design making a physical game without having to know how to code, which is really useful to wrap your head around some concepts of like establishing a combat system on like a notepad and not having to like implement and change things around like on a computer and have to worry about performance or how you're going to code it or how you're going to display it on the screen or anything like that. I mean, I've prototyped games and played them the next day on sheets of paper with friends, and we've had a good time. And I'm not saying that's a game you could go out and sell, but you can iterate super fast on pieces of paper. Like, you just cut out squares or whatever, write something on them, and if you got to change one, you just throw it away or write on the back. And I think there's kind of a renaissance going on with board games and card games, and I think that's why you see so many people getting interested in them, honestly. So a lot of that stuff's coming back.
Even some games that have those roots, like, I haven't played it, it's called Hearthstone.
Oh yeah, I love Hearthstone.
Mm. It's like a card game, but it's digital. Mm-hmm. I'm sure
it's made in Unity, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that until about a month ago.
But that's a huge card game that people play digitally against each other. I'm sure when they first came up with the idea for that, it was iterated, you know, on actual cards.
Oh, yeah, physical. I'm sure.
Like, that would be better. I think it should be, like, 4 years, but more focused.
I think maybe a longer program where you spend 1 year specifically focused on one thing, next year they're more focused on this thing, and then by the end, when you're finally done, you combine everything you've known to create like a final, you know, like your senior year or whatever year it is, to, you know, create, release a game and pitch it to somebody. I think that would really be the ideal program. So really just teaching you from the ground up, for students who want to know everything. And then they can have majors that are more focused for students who just want to, you know, be a concept artist at a major AAA studio, or to just be a programmer at a major AAA studio, and who don't necessarily want to be trained in all of it. But it's just difficult to teach it all within 4 years, and get everything.
So, like, you, since you, like, made a game in 3 years, what do you feel like you learned, like, in those 3 years about, like, making the game and, like, games after that you want to make?
I've definitely learned a lot about design and user interface, and I've changed it multiple times now. I think I finally set on something that I'm happy with. See, I've been doing this stuff since I was probably, like, 13, so I've been through a lot of projects. But trying to think of the main thing I've learned.
Probably persistence.
Yeah, I would say persistence, yeah. Because when you're working on it yourself, you have to be self-motivated. You don't have a team to bounce ideas off of. I do have friends that play it and everything, and they give me their opinions on versions. And it gives me a good idea of what I should change and update. But I'd say I've learned persistence because it's a solo project.
So you guys think about the money side of it a lot? Like, how am I going to make money from this? Mm. Is that like a main thing, or you just most think that, like, if I make something that I like, then I guess money will come? Like, how do you guys feel about, like...
I mean, I think we would all love to make something we like, just hope money comes, but unfortunately, you kind of have to ask the money question first sometimes. Because, I mean, you need food, you need electricity, you need a roof over your head. I think that's what keeps a lot of students coming out of college from starting their own studios, because they're already so in debt that they don't know if they can start their own thing and be able to be successful and pay a student loan and pay to keep the lights on and pay to keep food on the table. So it's the money question is, you don't want it to be the first question you ask, but sometimes it has to be the first question you ask. And that's where you said with students, game design students really learning about business is super important.
Yeah. What a lot of people don't realize that game studios can get funding from capitalists and banks and stuff. If you get yourself a good pitch, they're really not investing in the product itself, because the product will change over the course of its development cycle, and they know that. They're really investing in the company and whether or not they think they're going to get a return. In terms of my own little thing I got going at Lineal Games, I am always asking the money questions so that other people on my team don't have to. That's how I look at it. I want them focused on what they need to do, and hopefully they can put enough faith in me that they'll understand that the money is being handled. Of course they want money. That's kind of thing. You put your heart and soul into something, and you're like, well, did I just do all that just to do it, or am I going to get paid for it? Because I'd like to, you know, eat this week. And, I think that my thought on it is, it's necessary. Someone's got to do it. And if I can take care of it, then I think the team will work better as a whole. Would I rather hire someone to do the business part for me? Yeah, but
it is the most stressful part. So
that just requires more money.
Yeah, you know? I feel like it is becoming easier though. With I think we talked about this last time. Like you said, with investors, like there's crowdfunding now, with Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and there are a bunch of platforms you can go on now. After this project, if I don't make enough money, I'm going to try again. Obviously, it's what I love to do. And I think I might end up kickstarting a project just to get funded, just to make sure I can, you know, pay bills and stuff.
So I guess, last thing. So what do you feel like needs to happen for, I guess, gaming to go from interest to actual, like, career in Northeast Ohio? I'll actually start with you.
I think the major thing is people need to know that it's very doable. Like I keep saying, it's a very viable career, and there's people out there who are willing to train you, willing to work with you, and willing to help you. So I think a lot of times, I go back to our old high school, and I say, people will go, oh, what are you going to college for? I go, video game design. And they're like, oh, that's something people can do. Like, yeah, it's a huge field right now, and you can stay in this area, and you can be successful. And I think just getting knowledge out there, getting groups to talk to each other, and working together to really build build the area is kind of what I see as the most important part right now.
I might have mentioned this when we did our other recording, but as I was growing up, and I would mention to people, well, maybe I'd like to do games. I'd like to make games for a living. And people always told me to forget about it. They're like, don't do that. You can't make money, like all this stuff. And I think that it's a perspective issue. I think that the game industry really just needs to show that it has what it takes as a business, just like any other. I think people view it as not a business when it really is.
Yeah.
It's just another kind of business, but it just happens to put out games instead of medical equipment or investment strategy.
I think it's kind of the culture that revolves around gaming. It's a waste of time. You go outside and play, you know, but it's not. It's a great form of entertainment that provides lots of jobs.
Well, it kind of kills me that people like a lot, like people in the movie industry, because they're really making something that's kind of like a game.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, these people are so amazing, like, and they work so hard. And it's like, yeah, that's true. These are great people that work really hard, the directors and the producers, the lighting crew and all that jazz. But it's like, how do you look at that and then look at games and be like, no? Because, like, everyone's consuming movies, like, all the time, and you're not doing anything while you watch a movie.
Yeah. It's basically an interactive movie that you control personally.
Right.
And you create your own story from.
Yeah. That's, like, there's a weird perspective that people have on the game industry, and I think that we need to prove that it's an industry. I think talking about it as a game development industry and using the word industry might actually be helpful when referring to it for the game creation community as a whole.
Do you feel that people in the future, like, they will see the industry and actually put money into it, or will they still just see it as just a thing to do?
Eventually.
I think now people are starting to see it as more of an industry and less of just, you know, like a waste of time. So I think we're getting there now. I mean, I didn't know my family when I first said I want to be a video game. I want to make video games. They're like, are you sure? But, you know, now, this past Thanksgiving, all of my aunts and uncles, you know, they're very excited to talk to me about what I'm up to. I think actively it's growing now, and it's becoming, it's being seen as much more serious now. So, yeah, I think it's getting there. It's not quite there, and that's part of just educating people.
Yeah, like you said, I feel like if you have the passion and the drive to do it, there are the resources to learn, and there are the resources for it to grow here as well. Like, the seeds are already planted, we're just waiting on it to grow. That's how I feel. So
I'm trying to plant a couple more seeds. But
yeah, I think it's the game groups that are really spearheading the growth. And I think that's very important.
Yeah. Stuff like GDEX out of Columbus has been really great for Ohio. You get a lot of visibility. I think people are starting to take Ohio a little more seriously when it comes to developing software in general, and even hardware, 3D printing, and all that stuff around here.
Yeah, I think we're at the forefront of a new era for this area.